You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. Thank you to our sponsor, Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland, for supporting this season of our podcast. If you love beautiful Swiss cheeses, look for Emmy's premier Kaltbach label. Cheeses such as Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux, aged in the 22-million-year-old Kaltbach cave for superior flavor unlike anywhere else in the world. Hi, everybody. It's been a busy week at Cherry Bomb HQ. A lot of you will be happy to hear that we're working on our Jubilee Conference furiously. It's taking place Saturday, April 14th in New York City, and tickets will go on sale next Friday, March 2nd. So make sure you're signed up for our email to get the first notification of that. You can just go to the Cherry Bomb website and check it out. What else do I have to talk to you about? Oh, I have to thank our sponsor, Emmy, Cheese from Switzerland. They hosted a fun dinner the other night that they invited me to. It was at the Standard Hotel in New York's East Village, and we actually had fondue in a yurt. Only in New York, right? You heard that correct. Fondue in a yurt. And it was really fun. I mean, I love fondue. I'm not a fondue expert, but it has definitely inspired me to want to go buy a fondue pot and make some fondue at home. Although you could probably just do it in the pan or something. I mean, but it would probably be more fun to have the fondue pot. So if you happen to be in New York City or visiting, I really highly recommend it. It was so much fun. And just, you did not feel like you were in New York City. It was kind of crazy. All right, our next housekeeping matter. We are co-sponsoring this really interesting finance seminar that is taking place on March 8th. And it's a webinar. And if you have a business, a restaurant, a bakery, a bar, whatnot, and are looking to grow it, find investors, or just learn more about how the whole investing thing works, you need to check this out. We are doing it in conjunction with the law firm Davis Wright Tremaine. They have graciously volunteered their services for this and put the whole thing together. It is part of their Restaurant High AP program. And the title, it's a little serious. It's Successful Financing Strategies for Growth-Minded Restaurant Concepts. So if you're not quite sure what that means, don't worry. It's just, if you want to know more about finance and investing, I put the link on our Facebook page. So if you're listening to this, go to our Facebook page, look for the link. I slapped it up right now. I'll put a better post up later. But click on it, and you can look at the attend webinar information. I believe the in-person part is already filled up. There is a fee, but they're waiving the fee for Friends of Cherry Bomb and Friends of Radio Cherry Bomb. So, you know, this all came about last year when the whole Me Too movement was really gaining momentum. And the team at Davis Wright Tremaine, we were having a lot of conversations with them about what's going on and why this is going on in the food world. And so much of this really comes down to power and who has power. And in this country, money equals power. And we really need to have more women running their businesses, finding investors, you know, working with the investment community. And Cherry Bomb really wants to help with this. That, you know, we did that big 86 this project on our website. And it really just hammered things home for us that we really need to not just let this be, you know, it was a big deal at the end of the year, and then we all forget about it and move on to the next thing. But we really want to continue to talk about issues of power and who has power and how we can help women in this industry move forward and really get to the root cause of why harassment exists in the first place. So go to our Facebook page, check out the link. It's the Davis Wright Tremaine Restaurant High AP program, and I really suggest that you sign up for the webinar. And if you have questions, just DM me or email us at info@cherrybomb.com, and we are happy to answer them. Some other housekeeping stuff. This is equally important, but I'm sure you've all seen this on Instagram. Everybody is urging anybody with common sense and heart to follow Everytown on Facebook, on Instagram. I think you know how I feel about gun control if you listen to the show. I mean, I've always been an advocate for more gun control. I don't really understand why people need guns, but I know people in this country like having their guns. I just don't understand why they're not licensed as much as cars are. I remember when my driver's license expired, and you would have thought, I was a criminal of the first order, like an internationally wanted criminal. It was so hard. I had to go through driver's ed again as an adult. I had to jump through so many hoops. I had to take a driver's test again. And you can just imagine what that's like in New York City. And to think that people can just get a gun so much easier, and you don't need insurance, you don't need any of those things. You know, and my license is expiring in a few months, and I have to, you know, go make sure I take care of it again. So really just common sense stuff needs to be in place, and it's not. So go support Everytown. Another thing you should really check out is Moms Demand Action. And I know my sister is involved with this, and I've said to her before, I really think a mom revolution needs to take place. And I think it might just happen. You know, you saw what happened after the women's movement last year, and now with that march on Washington that's planned for, I think it's March 24th, and a lot of the Moms Demand Action meetings that are taking place across the country, there's definitely, you know, revolution in the air, and it's about time. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say on that subject. But our next guest is a mom, so maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it. So our first guest for today's show, Sonia Overheiser of A Couple Cooks. She is an author, recipe developer, blogger, and podcaster who has dedicated her career to healthy and sustainable eating. Sonia is based in Indianapolis, where she lives with her husband and work partner, Alex, and their son, Larson. One of the things that makes Sonia so unique and special in the world of food is how open she has been about living with a rare form of leukemia, her miscarriage, and the adoption of her baby boy. Sonia and Alex's first cookbook is out right now, and it's called Pretty Simple Cooking. Sonia Overheiser, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a thrill to be here.
And finally, right?
We've been
talking about this forever. And I do get to Indianapolis from time to time because my sister lives there. And I've just grown to kind of love Indianapolis and Martha Hoover and the team at Printex, which sadly is closed now.
Yes.
But so many people and things I love about that city. And I got to see you on a lot of the visits.
And we loved having you visit.
So I'm happy you are now in my backyard.
Yeah.
So what brings you to town?
So I am here to do a bit about the book. I was just at the feed making our kale Caesar salad, and I'm doing a cooking demo tonight, and then I'll be at the ISCP conference this weekend.
Fantastic. So tell us about the book.
Sure. So the book is 100 Vegetarian Recipes, and it came about because Alex and I, so we got married, we didn't know how to cook at all. And
wait, is that true?
Oh, so true. Yeah. So I was like, I couldn't even make pasta. It's pretty embarrassing, actually.
How did you survive?
Alex, you know, he could do a little more than I could. And then frozen food, Hot Pockets, not going to lie, breakfast cereal a lot. And I was just focused on my career. And at the time, this was about 13 years ago, there wasn't a lot of awareness around food and the value of food. And I just didn't think much of it. And we got married and we decided, okay, we want to have some guests over for dinner, but we can't serve them Hot Pockets or cereal. We have to.
Well,
we could have, but it might not have been the best experience. So we asked some friends about what cookbooks we could use. And my boss at the time gave me a cookbook from Julia Child. And at the time, I had no idea who she was. And I was like, who is this? Some old lady, I think. But I cracked open her cookbook, and the head notes were so encouraging. She was like, you can do this. Anyone can cook. It doesn't matter if you're an adult and you've never tried it before. You can flip an omelet if you have the courage of your convictions. And that really spoke to me. It was the first time I felt connected to someone through a book. And I realized she was a real person. And even though at the time she had passed on, she was speaking to me and she was encouraging me in the kitchen. And from then on, I was really connected to the people part of cooking. That was something I didn't realize. I thought cooking was just a chore that you had to do to put food on the table. I didn't realize how much of it was community-based. And so I started surrounding myself with people who loved to cook. And Alex and I would go over to friends' houses and learn from them. And it became this kind of spiral. And before we knew it, we just loved being in the kitchen together.
That's amazing. I figured you were a foodie from like birth.
Oh no.
Wow. So how did you two decide to, well, what were you doing before you started
I was in the technical writing business. So I worked for a small business and it's a women-owned business. I eventually became partner there and was there for 13 years. And then at the same time, Alex and I decided to start a blog with all the recipes that we were trying that we loved. And one of the books that we read when we first started cooking was Food Matters by Mark Bittman. And a lot of Michael Pollan's work talking about just cooking with more vegetables, doing as much home-cooked food as you can. And that really spoke to us in terms of what it could do for our bodies, what it could do for the environment, what it could do for our communities and the people around us. We started going to the farmers market, and it really opened up this whole new world to us of a new way of eating that we did not know existed. And at the time, especially in Indiana, there wasn't a lot of awareness about that. And so we decided we wanted to eat more vegetables. We wanted to support local farmers. And we realized it wasn't as hard as we thought. It wasn't as kind of aspirational as we thought it would be. It was something anyone could do. And that's why we started our website, to start sharing these recipes of here's something made with vegetables at home that tastes good.
It's sorry, choking live radio. It's really similar to what Martha Hoover has been here and talked about regarding Indianapolis. Martha, a lot of you, if you follow Cherry Bomb, you know who Martha is. She is a really successful restaurateur in Indianapolis and has over a dozen restaurants now, including what's the charity restaurant that she has,
Public Greens,
which is my favorite. But she talked about that. That's why she started her first restaurant. She had three young kids, and she couldn't believe that they were in the middle of all this farmland, but there was no attention paid to seasonal eating and farm to table and things like that. So you two were sort of like parallel pathing.
Well, she was a little bit before I was, but yes, she was very much a pioneer in Indianapolis. In a time when there wasn't a lot of awareness, as you mentioned. And she is, I can't speak enough of her. She is such an amazing person and has kind of taken us under her wing, or taken me under her wing, and just really been such a supporter of good food in Indianapolis, the community, helping people who don't have access to good food find it. She's just an amazing person.
She's been a big inspiration to me also. So how do you decide to do a blog with your husband?
Well, when he has the camera and you have the words, it's a good pairing. So I went to journalism school, and so I was interested in kind of the writing and the words part. And he didn't end up with an art degree. He started out with art and did sociology, but he's always been an artist. When he was in high school, he had a dark room. So just very interested in photography. So we decided to start out. And we started in 2010. And back then, you remember the internet, you didn't have to have good pictures. You didn't have to have compelling writing. You just had to be there. And so we were there, and we had some pretty terrible food photographs. And my writing style was very elementary and embarrassing to look back at now. But that's kind of what you did back then, right? You just kind of said, here's something something yummy. You'd like it too.
So how has the site evolved?
Yeah, so the site has evolved greatly over the past almost 8 years as the internet and blogs have become a thing. They've become much more competitive, much more professional. A Couple Cooks has turned into a brand, and these days, in order to make it online and in the publishing industry, you have to have a strong brand. And that's something that Alex and I have put a lot of thought into, of creating a brand that's focused around inclusion and community and joy around being in the kitchen. And it's not about a particular diet or a particular person who should follow, but really inviting everyone to the table around good food and trying to equip people with the skills that they need. It's a difficult balance between creativity and functionality. And that is something that we really tried to do in our book. You asked how the book started. That's where we're going here. So that's what we really tried to do in our book, is blend creative, beautiful recipes and flavors along with accessible techniques that anyone can do. And something we've been really proud of is, when now that the book is launched, hearing from people who are telling us it really is pretty simple to make these recipes fit in my life. And I'm a mom and I have 3 kids and they love them too. But also to blend like the artistic and the beauty with that, so that it's not a dumbed down version. It's something that's accessible, but it's also delicious.
Now, you don't just share recipes. As we said in the intro, you really share your life and what's going on in your life. How did you decide to really let your personal life be part of the blog?
Yeah, it's a hard balance. And I think that's something that most public personalities struggle with, is how much of my life do I share? It's something that we felt we needed to share to be authentic and real with the people who are following along. But we're very thoughtful about what we put out there in terms of, will this help other people? Will this speak to people who are in a similar situation, or are we just wanting to put it out there for attention? And so that's something we think about a lot, is how to be respectful and to relate to people in their story versus just putting it out there to be kind of like a news event.
And one of the most recent things you shared was the adoption of your son.
Yes.
So was that hard to write about that and to put something so deeply personal?
It was. It was. And something that involves other people, too. Mm-hmm. And I can't speak highly enough of Larson's birth mother. She is just an incredible woman. And she has been open from the start of wanting to share his story. And we've spoken with her frequently of, okay, are you okay if we make this public? And she's been amazing about it. So it's hard when there are so many different people involved in the story. But I think we found a way to talk about it that is respectful to all parties.
I think it's fantastic that you've shared that, because all too often adoption's not talked about. It's not shared. It's something that's kept very quiet. Same with infertility. You know, you also talked about your miscarriage, which must have been incredibly hard to share. But again, for so long, women just hid those things.
Yes. And that is something that I'm committed to, is just kind of shining a light on those difficult times. And the more that I speak up about it, the more I hear from other women of, oh, I've been through this too, and I feel like I can't talk about it, and I feel like I need to be putting up a front. And so I think the more that we can talk about it, the better. The more that we can shine a light on it, the more that people don't have to hide in shame. And I think that's also becoming a trend with adoption, that for so long it was just very hidden and shameful, as you said. And these days there's a much different perspective is evolving on adoption. And I'm so excited for when Larson can understand, just to tell him of how special it is that he's adopted and how many people just love him so, so dearly.
And then I also mentioned that you've talked about your your battle with cancer. And you said you don't like to talk about it as a battle because you were fortunate. And I found this so interesting. You're fortunate in that you knew something was wrong. You were diagnosed very quickly. You didn't have to go through chemo or radiation, but that you are a testament to what cancer research has done for all of us.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my cancer story is interesting because before I was diagnosed, there was no pain, there was no discomfort, no energy loss. And after I was treated, I felt exactly the same the whole time. So when I was eventually diagnosed, the doctor said, "We think that you have this type of cancer that is the good kind." And I said, "Oh, what's the good kind of leukemia to have?" And they said it's CML, so it's chronic myelogenous leukemia. And luckily, there's been a drug developed about 10 years before I was diagnosed that is a miracle drug. And I went on that drug, and it indeed was a miracle drug. I was, my white cell counts were sky high, and they came right back down within months that I'd been on the medicine. So for me, not having any physical struggles or trial, I don't feel worthy of the cancer survivor label because there are so many people I know in my life who have had such deep struggle. And for me, I kind of feel like a cancer wimp a little bit.
That could be a book, I guess. But for everybody out there who donates to a cancer charity or lends their time to something, I'm thinking of like just so many amazing organizations that are out there raising money for cancer research and awareness, your testament to how that works and why it's worth your time and your money.
It's an absolute success story. And at first I felt like, oh, my cancer story is kind of boring. But then I realized that's amazing to have a boring cancer story, right? Like to say, I went on a medicine, I was cured, I don't have to think about it on a daily basis. That's an incredible testament to cancer research.
So I have to ask, because it's kind of scary, you said there were really no symptoms. I know you had an issue with your spleen, but how did they even know something was wrong?
Yeah, it was actually my spleen. So before I was diagnosed, I could feel my left side of my body. I could just feel something kind of hard. And I don't love going to the doctors. I kind of put it off for months and then ended up going in and they found that my spleen was enlarged with all the white blood cells and it had expanded to a huge amount. So I was feeling it through my body.
Oh, well, you're incredible for sharing all of this. I mean, it's you know, so often you look at all these different food sites and Instagrams and all of this and it's just food, 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 recipe, recipe, recipe. But you really just, you know, there's so much humanity behind it on A Couple Cooks, and I really appreciate you sharing and just telling your truth and your story with everybody.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
But let's talk more about food.
Okay, let's do it.
Because you have a cookbook
out
right now. Where can people, did you do publish it yourself or you have a publisher?
No, DeCapo Press is our publisher.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's everywhere
it's
books
everywhere
are sold.
Everywhere books are sold.
Now, are you doing, I know you're in here in New York City to do your tour. Are you going anywhere else where people can meet you and find you?
We are. Do you want me to rattle off?
Rattle.
All So we'll be in Chicago March 1st. We will be in Minneapolis in early April, still nailing down the dates there. We will be in San Francisco and LA in April, and we will be in Nashville in May and Denver in May.
Oh, you have fun. So, you have a fun tour planned.
Yeah.
Are you bringing the baby?
Most of the stops will have Larson. So.
And he just turned one.
He did.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And he has lots of fans. So I think they're more excited about him than us, honestly.
Is he a good eater so far?
So far he is. And he has eaten more in his 1 year than I ate probably in my first 25 years. He has eaten truffles and creme brulee and all sorts of stuff. And he just loves it. He's very adventurous so far.
I think I might have been 40 before I had a truffle. So lucky Larson.
Yes.
Now, you're a vegetarian. Are you strictly vegetarian?
I am a flexitarian, so mostly vegetarian. I eat probably 90 to 95% vegetarian. Alex is probably a little lower. He loves his meat.
Oh, okay.
So.
But the book is vegetarian.
The book is vegetarian. Our website is mostly vegetarian. Because back when we were deciding, let's eat more vegetables, we realized how creative and delicious that can be. And so many people would ask us, like, how do I eat more vegetables? And so the book in part was to be an answer to that of, here are some really great, delicious vegetarian recipes.
And how are you raising Larson, if you don't mind me asking? Is he a flexitarian?
He is a flexitarian.
A baby flexitarian?
He's a baby flexitarian. So yeah, he'll have salmon every now and then, or Alex will make a hamburger, but mostly he'll eat vegetarian.
And as a mom, with everything that's going on in the world, I imagine you have some feelings about everything. Are you part of that Moms Demand Action?
I'm not, and now I want to be, so thanks for bringing that up.
I'm sure they're having meetings in Indianapolis, no doubt.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I was just talking with another mom this morning about something about being a mom just makes you, it changes you. And when you see these things happening, you think, what if that were mine, you know? And I knew I was going to cry on this. So yeah, it really changes your perspective on a lot of things to make you a lot more tenderhearted. And, I couldn't be happier to hear about moms kind of joining together for action.
Yeah. I mean, moms are incredible. All those teens standing up for what's right is so incredible. I am an aunt and a godmother, and I was like, I need to start Aunts Demand Action, because I feel the same way. You know, but anytime one of these things happen, you know, all these children are our children. It doesn't matter if you're not related to them or whatnot.
Absolutely. You know?
And
absolutely.
It's on all of us to make this world a better place. So anyway, check out on Instagram and Facebook, Moms Demand Action and Every Town, and definitely do your part. You know, I had posted something on one of my Instagrams after the tragedy down in Florida, and I was like, donate to Every Town. And someone said, I've donated, what can I do next? And I said, get your friends to donate, because really, again, like we talked about in the beginning, money is power, you know, and it comes down to which of these lobbying groups has the most money, sadly. I mean, that's gross, but that's reality. And so if you can donate to organizations like Every Town, even if it's $5, just do it. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to be rich to help. So, but Sonia, our time is up. It's been so nice talking to you. And I'm really thrilled to see you in Brooklyn, since, like I said, I've only seen you on your home turf. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on Larson's first birthday. And again, thank you for just sharing your story with everybody and being so wonderful.
It's been a thrill to be here. Thank you.
We will be right back after this word from our sponsor, Emmy Cheeses from Switzerland. It's time for a quick cheese lesson from our friends at Emmy, the makers of traditional, delicious cheeses from Switzerland. Do you know about Emmentaler? Of course you do. This is the original Swiss cheese, world famous for its distinctive holes and extraordinary flavor. Emmy's special Kaltbach Emmentaler AOP is cave-aged in Emmy's 22-million-year-old natural sandstone cave to produce an earthy, intense nuttiness and herbaceous wittiness. Whether you are snacking or party planning, serve your Emmentaler with dried apricots, rosemary sprigs, caramelized onions, or bacon, and pair it with black tea or an oaked Chardonnay, a Cabernet Sauvignon, or gin and tonic. Look for the red and blue Emmy logo at your favorite local grocer. Welcome back, everybody. We're here with our next guests, Chef Deborah Vantrese and mixologist Tiffany Barrier. Did I get that right? Barrier. All the way from Atlanta. Chef Deborah has had a long culinary career and an interesting career that's included art school. You are a flight attendant. You are now the owner of Twisted Soul Cookhouse and Pours.
Yes.
You had Edible Art Cafe and Gourmet Catering.
Yes.
And today you are the also the executive chef and owner of the catering company with Vantrese.
Yes.
And then Tiffany, you are the drinking coach on Instagram.
That's
Some
me.
People might know you that way. You actually made drinking at the airport cool when you were with One Flew South at the Atlanta airport. Today, Tiffany is a freelance bartender doing pop-ups and other projects. Chef Deborah and Tiffany are collaborating on a series they're calling the Cast Iron Chronicles, and they're here today to tell us all about it. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. I love your shirt. I just saw your girl boss shirt, Tiffany. Yeah. We'll have to take a picture of that.
Indeed.
But thank you both for being here, and I'm meeting you both for the first time, which is awesome. So welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb and to the Bomb Squad and all of the above. And you were at the James Beard House last night?
We were at the James Beard House in a huge form last night.
I saw a picture of you outside. You got to take advantage of the beautiful weather.
We brought it with us.
We brought the weather. You're welcome, New York. We brought the weather.
So you were doing a Cast Iron Chronicles dinner last night at the Beard House.
Yes. Yes, we did.
So tell us what Cast Iron Chronicles is and how it came about.
Cast Iron Chronicles consists of myself, another chef, Chef Jennifer Hill Booker, and of course, mixologist Tiffany Berrier. We were all featured in an article this past summer that stemmed from the lack of females and African Americans at the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival. A gentleman with NBC Black interviewed each of us individually. And from that interview, it went viral. We had never met. We knew of each other. And as a result of it, we decided that we should get together and talk about some of the things that we've experienced in our travels and during our careers in the culinary field. And once we got together, it was like kindred spirits got to meet. It was good for us to hear that we all have been experiencing some of the same things, the same issues. And we thought, you know, let's get together and, you know, put this on a bigger platform and speak about it, because we thought it was a story that needed to be told. That's how the Cast Iron Chronicles were formed. It was a history of our journey. We chose cast iron because of the tenacity, the strength that is utilized to make a cast iron skillet. And we felt like that is what it takes for females, and especially African-American females in this industry, to survive.
So, Tiffany, how did you? What's your role in this whole thing?
Well, you can't eat without drinking. So, forgive my voice. It's gone.
Oh, no, you're losing your voice. What happened?
I'm already naturally raspy, but James Beard is big, and New York is big, and my energy is so excited because being a bartender and being considered, for one, a real job, along with being a culinarian, is very, very important, so I did celebrate. No shame in my game. I celebrated. But it's major on so many levels. Females, women, real job opportunities. Again, back to bartending. It's just always a college job or a tip job, something that's taken seriously. But, excuse me.
So you have like emotional laryngitis.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, we'll do some of the talking for you.
I got that.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
So tell us about the dinner last night. What was on the menu?
Oh, wow. The dinner, we wanted to reflect a history of soul food. Myself, Jennifer, and Tiffany, you know, have spent the majority of our lives in the South. I'm originally from the Midwest, but the majority of my life has been spent in the South. So we wanted to kind of shed a different light on Southern food, soul food, cuisine. We think it's gotten a bad rap. And, you know, we came up with a menu and cocktail pairings that showcase the best of what our food is. So we did a chitlin sausage with a apple beet slaw on a cornbread brioche with a caramelized onion and shallot gastrique, a sweet potato and smoked chicken and peanut pot pie. And these were all like past hors d'oeuvres, a spicy fried chicken liver, on a crostini with a peach confiture. We did foie gras mousse. We did oxtail roulette. We did a Mississippi fried catfish with a buttermilk hominy grit and a tasso red eye gravy. We did a smoked ham hock with a braised candied winter greens, black IP risotto cake, and a little bit of barbecue jus on that.
Wow, how long did this feast go on last night?
About 3 hours, and to be quite honest, you know, one of the things, you know, that was a little bit different is that, you know, we did pair this dinner with cocktails, which typically Jane's Beer dinners are paired with wine. So we did a couple of courses, I think, that Tiffany did with wine, some incredible wines, but the majority of the courses were paired with craft cocktails.
Tiffany, tell us a few if you can.
Oh my goodness. I've served a lot of people. last night, historical for sure, for all of the knots, but people were, we did this. Like Deborah said, craft cocktails are something that people sometimes get afraid of. We have a comfort zone. I don't drink this. I don't like that. Bittersweet. So I came full force. Lots of color. Cane syrup, collard green juice, aloe liqueur, carrots, tequila, cayenne, agave, whiskey.
So wait, collard green juice. So you're not talking about pot liquor. You actually juice the collards.
Fresh collards.
Wow.
Fresh collards. Turn into a juicer. I wouldn't be surprised if our juicers stopped using wheatgrass and started shooting collard green juice. Outstanding. I mean, literally, it came in a vision. We've never seen it done. We researched to make sure no one would die, and it came out delicious, very bright and green. We used chickpea water just to give us, you know, a full visual, give us the proper head foam that we wanted. So consistency and substance.
So it was vegan to boot.
Yes.
Definitely a vegan cocktail.
Definitely. Everyone kept saying, I feel so healthy, and I'm like, mission accomplished.
So what do they call that? Aquafaba? The chickpea water?
Yes. Chickpea water, yes.
So when I see collard juice aquafaba cocktails down south, I'm going to know where that trend started.
Yes, you will.
The drinking coach.
The drinking coach. The drinking coach, exactly. So what did it mean for the three of you to be at the James Beard House?
Ooh, it for us was major. You know, once we formed Cast Iron Chronicles, we set forth to do a series of events. The first one started in December. We entitled it Cocktails, Conversation, Cuisine, because we didn't just want to feed people and give them drinks. We wanted to converse with people. We felt like, you know, there's a lot of people out here that can cook. There's not a lot of people who have had to take the path that we've had to take. And so that was the difference. That was the story. And it would culminate at the end, you know, by being at the James Beard House. It was the first time ever that three African-American women had been showcased at one time at James Beard. So we were very proud about that. And once we realized that, you know, definitely we were very emotional through this whole entire journey. We have shared plenty of tears. Many of the tears have been joyous tears, you know, but there's also been those tears just in the relation of the struggles that we've all gone through. And we continue to. It's not like, you know, oh, we got to the James Beard House and now everything is smelling like roses. We're from the South, you know, and we are minorities all the way in this particular industry. So, you know, to make it to the James Beard House, you know, of course, it's like receiving the Emmy in the culinary field for, you know, chefs and mixologists alike. And even more so for Tiff, because it's a rare occasion, you know, that, you know, Tiff as a mixologist, you know, is recognized as, you know, a liquid chef for the most part, you know, and not just, you know, on the backs you know, of chefs, you know, because, you know, within herself, she's creating some things that have me wowed, you know, as a chef. You know, so for that to be recognized, for us to be recognized, I mean, it was a great honor. But, you know, we're hoping we knock down some doors to make this journey easier for other women, other African Americans to come through and, you know, continue to make some things happen and to continue to progress in this field.
Well, bravo to you both. That's incredible, and I'm really happy for you and proud, you know, of what you're doing for women in this industry.
Thank you.
In general, because that's why we started Cherry Bomb.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
5 years ago, we realized, even longer, five and a half, 6 years ago, that women just were not getting their due in the industry.
Yes.
And, you know, we had a guest on the show last week, Jarell Guy, who just published Black Girl Baking. And we were talking about that I feel like there are a lot of similarities as to what's going on right now for Black women in this industry as to what I just kind of felt 6 years ago for women in general in the industry, that they just weren't getting their due. They were out there killing themselves, doing incredible creative things, but for whatever reason, the media just wasn't paying the level of attention that they should be. And I asked Jarell why she named her book Black Girl Baking. And she said she was so moved by the Black Girl Magic movement that she wanted to connect with that. And I just feel I'm so excited to see what's going on with Black women in this industry, because you aren't getting the recognition you deserve yet, but things are changing.
Yes, they
and
are.
I'm just excited by what's going on, and I'm so happy, you know, that you two are doing what you're doing, and I hope Cast Iron Chronicles, I take it all over the country. I don't know. What are your plans for this?
Well, we didn't. Are you good to speak?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to, save
right.
her voice.
I know. Yeah. I keep looking to Deborah. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Please. It's about
well,
the same.
And you know what? We'll have you back on the show because I feel like you're not getting your time because of your laryngitis. But
it's okay. To everybody's point here, I find it very exciting for one that women for one are finally getting our shine. And at this time, it just so happens to be Black women are getting their shine. So it's a duality. And I'm like, is this really happening? It really is the word magic. It really is exciting. I named a cocktail Black Girl Magic last night. 2 years ago, a year ago, I would have never put that on my cocktail menu. It would have been too bold or not approachable or offensive for me, honestly. I've worked behind complete professionals. So to even create and be comfortable to even say it, to make a pitch black cocktail last night with artichoke liqueur and chicory and vermouth and port and put gold flakes on top of it.
I want that now.
And this drink to go in a coupe glass with gold flakes, it was surreal. And I'm thinking to myself, I just made a black drink. For all the reasons, because I've been okay with being black my whole life. And I've been okay with being a woman my whole life. But now it's like cool. and I'm excited.
Now, I think the important thing for us right now, all of us, three of us in this room, all of us listening, is I worry a lot about things being a trend. And, you know, I talk about that with the Me Too movement, and we did a project called 86 This about harassment in kitchens and at bars and that women in this industry face. And, you know, a lot of people are jumping on the women bandwagon right now.
Yes.
And I'm really cautious about that.
Yeah.
And I want this to be a thing that's here to stay
yes.
and just continues to gain momentum, not the thing that's like the trend of 2018, like let's do a woman thing. And I'm sure you feel the same way.
Exactly the
Indeed.
Same way.
Deborah and I met Deborah. We live in the same city. We do the same thing. We never met. After that article came out, we met over a lot of rosé. And I was in love instantly, obviously because of who she was, but it was more than just what it was, and it's a respect. Women are not always respected. So how we carry ourselves, how we're perceived, how we look, how we speak, how we dress, those things are very important to me, very important to Deborah, very important to our tribe and our squad around. And with everything going on in food and beverage or any industry, I think being a woman and being a respectable woman means way more to me than any awards or Beard House or Gold Mimmies, things like that. But being respectable and a woman is where it matters.
Now, Deborah, you're a business owner.
Yes.
We talk a lot about how important it is for women to own their businesses,
yes,
be out there raising money. How did you become an entrepreneur?
I busted my butt, that's simply put.
And you're a serial entrepreneur. You've got a lot of businesses.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Serial. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. It's, I was very sure of what I wanted, how I wanted it done from day one. I have the background as a flight attendant. And so, the catalyst for me to even get into this industry, which I love, and it was my passion. I really didn't know that at the time. It was just something I liked doing. I came from flight attendant, predominantly female business, and, working with union and management. But we had a strike, and I got left feeling vulnerable, with other people making decisions for my livelihood. So for me, as a woman with a small child, I needed to take control of my life. And the way I felt that I could do it best was, to work myself into a position where I owned my own. I did not want to work and depend on somebody else's business to keep me going. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just not the path I wanted for myself. So I started my first business in 1998. I've had my ups. I've had my downs. As a female, I've experienced a lot of things that we women, have to, face, child care, child sick, husband's divorcing you, the whole nine yards. I've gone through all of that. So I know it is a struggle, but I've learned to be a chameleon of sorts and make sure at the end of the day, I could still take care of me and my child and, just keep going, putting one foot in front of the other. And, businesses, I've shut them down and switched and decided, well, I'm going to be a caterer now. Okay. It's like restaurant thing. That doesn't work for my livelihood. So this business has lent itself to a lot of flexibility, if you're willing to be flexible. When my daughter got grown, that was the point that I decided I could revisit, the restaurant and ownership again with that. The financing, there was no one who was willing to take a chance on me, even though I've made a living of doing this, for years. But, some of us, we're cooking at home, we're cooking in the house, your kitchen, anybody's kitchen, so we're not necessarily legit businesses. So on paper, I can't tell you how much money I can make, but, I'm telling you, I make money, but there was no one who was supporting me with that. So I just kept grinding and saving and saving, so I financed my own business. And I'm real proud of that because, it wasn't an easy thing. This has been a journey of over 20 years, but I always believed in myself and I never stopped. And through that now I've been able to, open up a restaurant of my own and actually, not bragging, but yes, I am one of the best restaurants, one of the top restaurants in Atlanta right now. And I own it and I don't owe a bank, but now if I needed to go to a bank, I can prove that I'm worth taking that chance on.
Well, I'm going to put in a plug for our finance seminar that's taking place on March 8th, and you can, it's in person in New York, but there's a webinar.
Oh,
and
excellent.
It's with Davis Wright Tremaine, this big law firm that has a big restaurant practice, And we were talking with them about how to get more women owning their own businesses, getting access to the investor community.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I'll make sure you have the information, because we'd love for you to tap into that. And for anybody listening, if you go to Cherry Bomb's Facebook page right now, I put the link there. So you can just click on it and register for the webinar. And I really suggest that anybody with an interest in learning more about finance and investing and understanding that whole world takes advantage of this. It's free for listeners of Radio Cherry Bomb. So,
and I think that's excellent. And we need more of that. We need more of that, because there's a lot of people out here that deserve their restaurant, and they just need, you know, a direction to go to.
Absolutely. And Tiffany, quickly, because we're going to run out of time. You are the opposite. You are an independent operator. You're doing pop-ups. You're collaborating. Tell us about that side of the business.
I sometimes say I'm winging it, because I am. But again, it wasn't considered a real job. Crafting some cocktails, making some change, going home, going back to the books, or taking care of kids or dogs, or traveling. It's been always a liberating job. And I don't know. And that is my weakness, is business. But I do know that I hold something like a personality and a craft and a passion for great alcohol, craft cocktails, service, hospitality. So yes, freelancing has happened in the past year. A lot of brands and restaurants and chefs and festivals were calling me like, we got an idea. Can you come do this? Can you batch for 3,000? Can you batch for 2? Can you do a private party? And this was from fine dining to nice holes in the walls and bands. And I don't have a no voice. So I kept saying yes. And I'm winging it.
Well, I hope you keep having great opportunities to say yes to. You both are incredible. Whatever we can do to help with Cast Iron Chronicles to spread the word or whatnot, we are happy to. And I hope, like I said, you take it all over the country. We haven't done an event in Atlanta yet. We would love to come down to Atlanta.
Please. We would love to have you.
We can do something with both of you. But please come back to Radio Cherry Bomb anytime you're in New York. It would
thank
be our pleasure.
Us.
But
great.
Thank you both, and congratulations on your James Beard appearance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take care. That's it for today's show. Thank you to our sponsor, Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland, including the Kaltbach cave-aged Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux. Thank you to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore, and to the band Tra La La for our theme song. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Heritage Radio Network and Cherry Bomb Magazine. We record our podcast each week in a shipping container in the back of Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I kid you not. We'd love it if you could leave a review of Radio Cherry Bomb on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and now Spotify. Let us know who you'd like to hear on a future episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.